The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Hey folks, Bob here with this week's Bubble Genius Showcase item of the week. Mother's Day is just around the corner, so head on over to BubbleGenius.com and pick up their Mother Scrubber Earth Mother Gift Pack. This lovely mom-themed gift basket is perfect for cosmic hippie goddesses everywhere. You'll get their Yo Mama Cocoa Butter Soap, Peace, Love, and Happiness Soap, and Hippie Stench Artesian Perfume Oil. Have a spa day on Mount Olympus. Only $30 at BubbleGenius.com, but if you use our promo code Bob and Chez, that's BOBANDCHEZ, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now let's start the damn show.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
No, it's going to be fine. It was a party in Vegas. A lot of drugs, a lot of people I don't know. I was there with Crystal Lee and this guy, Paul Brown, who wanted me to invest in a TV show for Crystal. I don't know. Well, I don't know. It's going to be like a Dallas set in Washington. Stu, what does it matter? Okay.
Will Crystal back up your story that you weren't using?
Just go put out the statement.
You know what? You never should have been in the same room, Congressman.
Goff! Yeah, the Swiss make an anti-aircraft gun called the Oerlikon.
Listen, Charlie.
20-millimeter cannon, high rate of fire.
I know the Oerlikon. Don't forget the limo driver.
What do you mean?
Oh, you took a limo from the casino to the airport, maybe. It's easy enough to track down a limo driver, hand him a subpoena, ask him if anything was going on in the back seat, so, you know, terms of cleaning up this.
Were you listening at the door?
I wasn't listening at the door.
Were you standing at the goddamn door listening to me? How could you even? That's a thick door! You stood there and you listened to me?
I wasn't standing at the door. Don't be an idiot. I bugged the scotch bottle.
What?
It's got a little transmitter on it. I got a little thing in my ear. Get past it.
Don't believe this. Who the fuck are you?
It's not my ear right now. Take it easy. I was going to tell you about it, but I had to leave the room for a second because you were getting indicted.
Oh, you're getting indicted. Is there a camera in here?
It's a little paranoid.
That's right. Will you take the bug off my scotch bottle now?
Sure.
The best music on the best station.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
It is Tuesday, May 3, 2016, and this is the Bob and Chez Show presented by BubbleGenius.com. I'm Bob Seska, that's Chez Pazienza sitting right there.
Hey there.
We're brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. They make soap. They make soap in fun shapes and lovely scents. Go to BubbleGenius.com and get lots of soap in. Okay. Also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. Get free legal advice from Charles Bowen at thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob and Chez. Or you can click the link in the podcast page. Get there that way, too. Okay. By the way, I always forget to do this. Thanks to our latest affiliate, our newest affiliate, Little Green Footballs, for carrying the podcast twice a week, every week. Really appreciate Charles Johnson carrying the show over there. All new audience members at Little Green Footballs. We really appreciate all of you listening. And by the way, just by way of reiterating what we talked about last week, the after party should be ready to go. You should be able to log in normally with the after party, sign in, and get all of your fun, profanity-filled episodes of the after party. So go and do it if you're a member of the after party. If not, please, we're urging you to sign up for the after party through patreon.com/Bob and Chez. Click the Patreon link at the top of the page. All right, so another Tuesday, another big primary day. We've got the Indiana primary happening right now, in fact. I don't know what's going to happen. You're probably hearing this show, as always, long after we have results from the primary. So we're not really going to talk about Indiana all that much, other than to say, you know, I'm looking at the results so far from the Indiana primary. It looks like 55-44 among the Democrats. It's Hillary Clinton leading 55-44 with 4% precincts reporting. Republicans Donald Trump is handily leading that race, 53% to 33%. John Kasich with 10% there. So not much else to report there. You know, obviously on the Democratic side, it's going to change. Oh, by the way, the numbers did change just a little bit just now, but it's still 55-44 on the Democratic side. All right, like it really matters at this point anyway.
No,
it's kind of done on the Democratic side. The Republican side is still,
not if you ask Bernie.
I know, and we are going to talk about that a little bit. Bernie Sanders had a little press conference over the weekend and had kind of a bizarre interpretation of the Democratic rules when it comes to superdelegates and delegates and when those delegates are officially counted and so forth.
Bernie is apparently still hallucinating.
Right. I don't know. I wish I could figure it out. I wish I knew what he was talking about. Believe it or not, I still like Bernie Sanders. I just don't get what the hell he's talking about here.
And excuse me, I'm talking.
No, not anymore. But I'm just saying, I think he's wrong about the superdelegates. But we're going to dive in.
He's wrong across the board about all of this. And it's infuriating because, as I wrote, I think, I don't know whether it was last week or the week before that, this is sort of the moment of truth for him, where he has the ability to go out with a ton of dignity and with the ability to sort of have some influence on Democratic politics, or he can be an ass.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I mean, that's what
and
I wrote.
He's being an
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I wrote in Salon the other day and also the Daily Banter yesterday, is that, you know, he has the opportunity now to be the kingmaker in the Democratic Party. I think from what we've heard is he's going to stick with the Democratic Party. He's going to stay in the party. He's not going to go back to being an independent. So therefore, he has a great deal of power, not only in the Senate, but in the broader Democratic Party. And if he can focus on that, I think there's a lot still to be done, a lot that he can still do. Even if it's just from the perch of the U.S. Senate rather than being from the presidency. But as we've witnessed, and as I wrote about again in Salon this week, I just sort of encapsulated everything we've been saying on the show with regard to this Democratic campaign and as well as how the revolution should proceed from here. I think he has the opportunity to carry on this revolution, and again, it can happen from the ground up. It doesn't need to happen from the presidency down. We don't have to wait for a presidential messiah to change everything. If the revolution is for real, and they really want to carry out this revolution, there's a very simple path. It's a path of least resistance. Get in through the ground up, through school boards and city councils and municipal government and so forth. Even state level government. Those posts aren't that difficult to run for, especially as you build up your resume with lower level offices. And not only that, but there's also the opportunity to get into the Democratic Party as a committee person, precinct captain, so forth, and influence how the Democratic Party works at that level, too.
But so much of this is kind of a cult of personality. And I'm sorry, you know what? You don't like that? Suck it.
Yeah.
Because it's true. I mean, Bernie is a sort of messianic figure. I mean, you know, there's a painting of him in Silver Lake here in L.A. Somebody made a big mural with Bernie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
Obama's that way too. I mean, messianic
absolutely.
Paintings of Obama are notorious.
So. No. And I get it. And I think that politics in general, a lot of times we do tend to follow leaders.
Right.
And having a sort of leaderless revolution, which I know that's something that the very far left is, you know, loves to talk about gods and masters and all that.
Yeah.
But that's the harder thing to do, to have a sort of revolution where you do. And here's the thing, that revolution is not a revolution. That revolution that you're talking about, continuing that revolution, that's actually kind of what Hillary Clinton is talking about.
Yeah.
That's doing hard work.
Well,
that isn't just you wake up one morning and, look at that. We all wanted it and poof, there it is.
Well, it is.
That's joining parties and getting involved in politics at low levels so that you can change the system over time.
Yeah, which is why Bernie Sanders consistently refers to it as a political revolution. And in order for it to be a political revolution, you have to participate, which is why the Bernie or bust thing is so confounding, because it involves not participating at all. And if you want that revolution, there are several different ways that it can occur, and you have to look at those different options in terms of past success. You can go and do an Occupy Wall Street version 2.0 and see if that works out. But chances are, based on history, it's not going to work out so well. You can just simply shout from Twitter or Facebook at your various elected representatives, that's going to have a very limited appeal. You can fill out petitions, yeah, or you can make memes.
Lots of memes. Memes are really important in politics.
Oh, yes. And, I mean, you can also sign change.org petitions, et cetera, but that will only get so far. But to me, there's really one way to do this. Well, there's really kind of one, let's say two. Let's qualify two ways to do it. One is to actually infiltrate politics, to actually get in there and become the leaders. Don't wait for leaders to do something. Become those leaders. And then the other way is to just vote. I mean, there are so many young people who just do not vote, especially in non-presidential primaries. See what the vote, see what the turnout is among 18 to 29 next year in the 2017 primaries, gearing up for the 2017 off-year elections. Watch the turnout. It's going to be really low unless they decide to take up this mantle, continue to become, you know, Bernie Sanders type figures within the political system. And it can happen again within the two-party system. That's the way the change can be most readily made. Otherwise, you're biting off more than you can chew. Your eyes are bigger than your stomach in this case, because approaching all of this by like, okay, from the outside, we're going to entirely change the system. But what we've seen from history is that the people who changed the system most, I mean, one of the figures who changed the system absolutely across the board in many, many different ways was Franklin Roosevelt. And he changed the system from within the system. And there are people, you know, at various levels of government who have influence over the system and who are able to make changes, who aren't heroes the same way FDR was and some other Democratic characters throughout the past 100 years or so. So, I mean, these are tried and true methods of carrying out political revolutions that I think will be effective. I mean, I can't offer up any guarantees, but I do know from personal experience that getting into, for example, the Democratic Party structure and making changes within that structure is entirely possible.
What I'm waiting for is the news conference from Bernie Sanders' new campaign manager, Sir Davos, who has talked to Melisandre, and she's going to go in and put her hands on Bernie's campaign.
Right. I just watched that this morning, by the way.
Bring it back to life at the last minute, by the way. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I know. And Melisandre, a couple of big endings of the first two episodes involving Melisandre in both cases.
God, it's so good. It really Freed from the books, good. The show has just been awesome.
And, you know, and then Sir Davos has become my favorite character on that show,
awesome.
By the way.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Anyway, so, okay. What we have here, obviously, on the top of the list in terms of changes that I think a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters would like to make is the superdelegate system. And that brings us to this news conference. I think it was the National Press Club or something like that. Bernie appeared over the weekend and talked about what he is describing as being a contested convention. And of course, as I said in the Daily Banter, I said, look, it's Bernie Sanders' campaign. If his goal is to have a contested convention, there's nothing I can do to stop him. But if he's going to do it, I think at the very least, he's got to describe how the process works a little more accurately. Because this, what he talks about here, and I've got the tape right here, it doesn't make any sense to me because, well, let's just listen.
Let me now just say a few words about delegate math and our path toward victory. As all of you know, there are a total of 4,766
total. Dear God, I swear, if I had to listen to that for 4 years, I would blow my f***ing brains out.
Democratic delegates, 4,047 of them are pledged, i.e., they come out as a result of the contest in the various states. 719 are superdelegates. A candidate...
So far, the numbers are correct. I mean, he's got the numbers pretty much spot on.
Democratic candidate needs 2,383 votes in order to win the Democratic nomination.
That's what he's about clear about here, is the 2,383 is pledged delegates, a majority of pledged delegates plus a majority of the superdelegates. That brings us to 2,383. However, bear this in mind. A majority of pledged delegates is only 2,025 delegates, okay? So just so we're clear on that.
Let me be very clear. It is virtually impossible for Secretary Clinton to reach the majority of convention delegates by June 14th.
That is not entirely true, because she can reach a majority of pledged delegates by June 7th by California.
Right.
And that pledged delegate majority, again, is only 2,025, not 2,383.
Yeah, he's just grasping at straws.
Let's just finish up what he has to say, and I'm going to dive back in here.
It's the last day that a primary will be held with pledged delegates alone. In other words, once more.
Okay, so he's saying that Hillary Clinton won't get to 2,383 with pledged delegates alone.
Yeah.
Which she doesn't need to get to 2,383 exactly. With pledged delegates alone. She only needs to get to 2,025. Now, already she's got voiced support, like verified support from
520 superdelegates.
She's got 520 superdelegates to Bernie's 39. All right. So, with the pledged delegates and with the superdelegates who have expressed their support for Hillary Clinton, that puts her currently at 2,165. She's just over 200 total delegates away from the 2,383. Now, the reason why Bernie Sanders is going to go on here, and we'll just skip right down past this. He basically goes on to say that by definition, this is going to be a contested convention because the superdelegates haven't put her over the 2,383 yet.
It's just desperate. Man.
Because it's so desperate. The superdelegates don't officially vote until the convention. But this is the way it works every single year. None of the Democratic nominees go into the convention with the superdelegates having already voted at the convention. That doesn't make any sense. So what he's describing here is what he's doing is he's mixing up the numbers. All that needs to happen then is the other superdelegates to weigh in at the convention. And that's just that's a ceremony. That's ceremonial. That's a technicality and doesn't really make it a contested convention. The only thing that will make it a contested convention is if Bernie Sanders and his surrogates continue to misinterpret the rules and use that as justification to not conceding after the primaries and taking the campaign through June into July into the convention.
Which is what it seems like they're going to do.
It seems like that's exactly what he's going to do. The last of the primaries, after Hillary Clinton has a clear majority of pledged delegates, and in terms of expressed support from superdelegates, a clear majority in those two, he's interpreting this as being she doesn't have enough, so therefore he's going to contest it, which again is so dangerous. And this is the point of everything we're saying with regard to this. And again, I'm not cutting Bernie Sanders with regard to his character or his policy positions. This is merely political strategy, and it's strategy that's going to damage the Democratic nominee who will be Hillary Clinton in the general election. Because what it does is it offers up to the news media a great big fat excuse to paint both the Democrats and the Republicans at their respective conventions as being equally chaotic and equally loaded with mayhem and argle bargle and whatever you want to call it. But if he does concede, then the Republicans have the chaotic convention and the Democrats look like grown-ups in the room after the Republicans look like a bunch of children. Throwing poop, playing monkeys, and what have you.
Never forget that today you have Donald Trump accusing Ted Cruz's father of being involved in the assassination of JFK.
That's
what the Republican Party is. Right?
There are so many things happening on the Republican side right now that is just, I mean, it was funny. I was at the gym the other day. I was going to say this before we get into talking about Harry's razors here. But I was at the gym the other day, and this, I don't know, she looked like 65-year-old woman walking in, gets on the treadmill, immediately turns Fox News Channel on the TV.
Dear God.
And I wanted to go up to her, and this is the second time I've seen her do this. I wanted to go up to her and say, hey, is there any breaking news on the size of Trump's fingers? And it's just like, oh my God, I can't believe you've got your eyes glued to Fox News Channel for some sort of breaking news as to whether or not Ted Cruz's dad was involved in the Kennedy assassination. I mean, that's how insane. You know, to me, if I was following a political party that was behaving like this, I would be embarrassed to do it in public. You know, I'd be embarrassed to look at Fox News Channel in public of this person knowing the nonsense that they're talking about. But suffice to say, these are, again, brainwashed bubble dwellers, and there's no counting for logic or rationality or even good taste on that side. All right, so we're going to talk about Harry's razors, and then when we come back, we're going to get into Ted Cruz versus Donald Trump. But, you know, there's always time to talk about Harry's razors, my favorite razors. And the razors that are giving me a clean, close shave every damn day with zero razor burn. It's astonishing. I never thought I'd find razors that were this affordable and this great. And those of you who have ordered your Harry's razors from harrys.com already know this. But for those of you who still haven't tried, it's time to pull the trigger, all right? Especially if you're interested in clean, close, and affordable shaving experience. By the way, once you get your Harry's kit in the mail, you'll immediately notice the quality of not only their razors and their products, but also the way they package their items. It just shows you how tasteful they are, how compelled they are to bring you a product that is top quality. Do what I and over a million others have done, men and women alike, make the switch to shaving products from harrys.com. Stand up against overpriced store-bought blades in their protective glass display cases. It's a razor revolution. Oh, and by the way, don't forget, ladies, Harry's is perfect for your legs and armpits. Works there, too. Go to harrys.com. Enter the promo code BANDC. That's BNC for Bob and Chess. Get $5 off your first Harry shave. Plus, you'll be supporting the show by taking good care of your face or your legs with Harry's razors. That's HARRYS.com.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
All right, welcome back to the show today. It's our big Tuesday show, the day of the Indiana primary. In honor of the Indiana primary, over the weekend I watched my favorite Indiana movie called Breaking Away.
It's a very good movie.
I love that movie.
Yes. The Italians are coming.
Yeah, the Italians are coming. And I had some Einy food at the same time while I was watching the movie. All right, so let's get into Trump versus Ted Cruz here. It's like they're billing Indiana as kind of Cruz's last stand, though. I don't think so. I think Cruz is in this to the convention.
I think so too.
What are the reasons?
Yeah, no way. Cruz is dropping out because I think that deep down he genuinely thinks that the Republicans are going to hand him the nomination over Trump.
Well, one of the reasons why Ted Cruz is so hated among Republicans is because of just this, because he refuses to get out, because he does things like nominate a vice presidential running mate before he even has the nomination or is even in first place or is even close to having the delegates required to be in first place. He does these kind of things on his own, and he doesn't really consult with the party establishment. He certainly doesn't consult with other members of Congress when he's doing this sort of shenanigans in Congress.
He doesn't care who he pisses off.
That's right. That's right. And that makes
in
him
terms of he doesn't have any friends, and he doesn't care that he doesn't have any friends.
Yeah, exactly. And he doesn't seem to care. He just doesn't, because he's wired in this way where he feels as if whatever strategy he yanks out of his ass is going to be far better than what the Republican Party could possibly do as a coalition. So, you know, that's kind of the Ted Cruz strategy in a nutshell. But before we get into the details of what's going on between Cruz and Trump, my favorite news story of the week so far was evidently Carly Fiorina fell through a trap door on stage or something like that.
I think I saw that.
Yeah. What disappointed me is you couldn't actually hear the sound of her falling through this trap door on stage at this Cruz rally. You could just see her. She just went straight down. She didn't fall over. She just went pew, right down through the floor.
Wow.
And this is kind of the lead in. So what I did is I added a sound effect. So we get the sound of Carly Fiorina going through the trap door in the stage.
Hey, welcome. Your next first family, Heidi Cruz, your next first lady, Carolyn and Catherine, and the next president of the United States, Ted Cruz.
I isolated it. So here's the sound of Carly Fiorina falling through the trapdoor. Whoops, there she goes. So I think we have a new Carly Fiorina sound.
Wait, did Ted Cruz, was he playing country music as his intro? Of course he was, right?
Yeah, he was.
Do you have any idea how much I'm going to miss Barack Obama?
You know, I think they're using...
Barack Obama's favorite song last year was How Much a Dollar Cost from Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah,
That is just, that's the coolest f***ing thing.
Can we speak for a second here about his White House Correspondents' Dinner?
Astonishing. He's just, I wanted to write something about it, but a lot of people said it. Yeah. Oh, really cool. You know what? I'm not interested in having a cool president. I think that having someone who, that's the kind of crap that gets you into trouble when you want to, you know, vote for a guy you want to have a beer with.
Yeah.
I want somebody who is hyper competent, but there is no denying how awesome it's been to have Obama in addition to his being hyper competent.
Yeah.
To have him be so unbelievably cool. Just unflappably cool. A laid back guy. He's got him and his family, for all the crap they take from the far right, they just have a ton of class and a ton of dignity. It's just been awesome.
Yeah, and on top of that,
he's going to be missed so much.
Whoever it is who he's discovered to write his jokes, whoever's writing his White House Correspondents' Dinner jokes over the years so far, because every single time he kind of knocks it out of the park. But whoever's doing it deserves an award of some sort. Do we know who's doing? I'm not aware. I thought at one point it was like Jon Stewart's writing staff who did it, I think, one year. I mean, it sounded like this year, his jokes sounded very similar to Bill Maher monologue jokes. But anyway, it was still hilarious, and he's just a badass. I mean, what could you say?
He's totally cool.
We just finished ranking on the cult of personality, but, you know, look... What's cool is cool, and it's objectively so. He's objectively cool. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
In addition to being cool, he is also, first and foremost, unbelievably good at what he does. Just a smart politician and a really good leader.
Yeah, and it was fun to see him doing a bit with John Boehner, where John Boehner made fun of himself, where there was a joke about him crying, and then they were doing that sort of badass Wes Anderson slow motion walk through the hallways. I guess that's what it was kind of supposed to be. And John Boehner was holding a glass of Merlot, which is hilarious.
Yeah,
I mean, he's all around really good.
What I liked about that, the thing that bothered me most about that is that Boehner for so long did allow himself to sort of be a tool of the Tea Party zealots.
Yeah,
and he wouldn't work with Obama. But what I liked about that is that for just a second there was that reminder of the good that the establishment does. When I say the establishment, I mean people who realize that, look, you fight like hell for what you want politically, but at the end of it, you have to get along. You have to be, you both love America, you're both fighting for, you know, your vision of America, certainly, but you're on the same fucking team.
That's right.
And I remember that from my entire life, you know, my childhood. I remember that. You know, sure, you had Tip O'Neill and you had Ronald Reagan, who would fight like hell for what they believed in. But at the end of the day, they respected each other and they liked each other.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's important. That is hugely important to have relationships like that. Otherwise, nothing gets done. And so to see that, to sort of see that captured for just a moment, we're like, you know what? At the end of the day, we can still joke about ourselves. We can still, you know, we're still on the same side. And that is being an American. That's cool. That's something I appreciate.
Yeah, right. Well, and I wonder, too, how much of John Boehner's deal was merely cosmetic for the edification of the Tea Party coalition. I wonder how much or how often John Boehner was, you know, meeting at the White House with the president and saying, hey, you know what, I just can't deal with these guys. I don't know what to do. I've got to do this, but I'm going to tell you something different. I don't know how much of that was like...
I think that he's again, he's pretty establishment, so I think that... And he's sane.
Yeah.
You know, Boehner may be a lot of things, but he's sane. And I think that by not being a zealot, I think that that's probably a lot of what... a lot of the kind of conversations that you heard at the Oval Office between he and Obama.
Yeah, and I'm sure Paul Ryan's going through the exact same thing right now. He's got to deal with not only the Democrats on one side, but then he's also got to deal with these Tea Party wingnuts on the other side. And, I don't know, it's clear and obvious why they can't get anything done, why the Republicans are, you know, have a, like, 7% approval rating in Congress, something like that. Ridiculous. Right. It's just because they don't know who their master is. They don't know. They're leaderless. It's herding cats, as they say.
Right, and, yeah, it's herding cats.
And again, you have guys like Ted Cruz, who just does his own goddamn thing. Doesn't give a shit what anyone else does, what the establishment Republican Party is all about. He's just going to do his own thing, including nominating Carly Fiorina for vice president. There she goes through the floor again. All right, so we got a number of things to talk about with regard to Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. First of all, and we're going to, I'm just going to tease this here a second. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back and really get into it. Ted Cruz admitted once again in public that he basically abuses his children, his two little girls. No wonder they like squirm and wriggle away to get away from him every time he goes
away from him. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's a big doughy monster. Just thwacks them and spanks them every time they step out of line. This is the kind of president that half of the Republicans want. They want a president who hits his little girls when they say something mean or disrespectful to Ted Cruz.
To Jesus.
To Jesus, exactly. We're going to get into it right after.
Offending Jesus.
Right after we talk about Patreon, back after this. Hello, it's Bob to tell you about our Patreon page. You might be asking yourself, what the hell is a Patreon page? It's a website where you can help support our podcast by donating money to the show. You can sign up for $1, $5, $10, or $15 per month, or if you're filthy rich, you can sign up for more. In exchange, we'll bring you exclusive Patreon-only content like our post-mortem shows, memberships to the after party, and commercial-free unbleeped versions of our free show. And if we reach our crowdfunding goal, we'll bring you new shows every weekday. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez, or click the Patreon link at BobSeska.com. Let's do this thing.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Oh, by the way, the second half of today's show is brought to you by the BobSeska.com Amazon link. If you shop at Amazon.com, especially for Mother's Day, enter Amazon using our link. It's just below the logo at BobSeska.com, and we get a small commission from everything you buy. Everything. It costs you nothing and helps support the show. Thank you for doing that. Okay, so Ted Cruz is just a monster. What's really funny is he's not just a monster. According to one protester, one anti-Cruz protester, Ted Cruz is a fish monster.
A fish monster. I love that. What a great thing to call him.
Yeah, it's a fish monster. I've got the audio here. See if you can decipher it. It's kind of vague, but I just want to play it anyway, just for good measure. This is a protester outside a Ted Cruz rally telling Ted Cruz to his face that he's a fish monster. Yeah, it says, you look like a fish monster. And then Ted Cruz's response, sharp as always, God bless you, sir.
Yep.
Really, he's a smarty. Yeah. He's always got the good comebacks, doesn't he? All right. But again, this is the second time that Ted Cruz has admitted in public, on the record, that he hits. See, he's got these two little girls. And they've appeared with him in commercials. They've appeared at rallies, obviously, after the debates.
They've attacked Hillary Clinton in commercials.
Exactly.
In an ad.
They're
which is just lower than low.
I mean, they're preteen little girls. I mean, I don't know how old they are. They look to be around 6 or 8. And he admits to spanking them in public. I mean, spanking. Not just an occasional a bop on the rear end or something like that, but like spanking. To me, spanking has a very specific definition where you put the child over your knee and just start hammering away on their body with your open fist.
I am the first one to say that that we have a tendency in our culture now to not discipline children at all.
That's
but
true.
One of the things that should have gone by the wayside a long time ago was spanking. Actually physically hurting your child is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's
an abomination.
Right, it is. And I think at the same time too, the fact that he was willing to admit it in public, like he was proud of it. I raised a stepdaughter for 15 years from age 3 to age 18, okay? I never spanked the stepdaughter, obviously. But when her mother did, it was usually just, oh, she's not looking, pop, right on the butt, and that usually resolved things. But never did either of us go around saying, you know, we proudly spank our little child who's 4 years old. You don't. Well, you don't have to be a monster to go around and be proud of the fact that you whacked your. I mean, here's me. I'm 6'4", 220. I'm not going to go around hammering away at children who are 4, 5, 6 years old. Ted Cruz is my same age. Probably weighs about the same as me, but in a different way. Goes around whacking his kids and then bragging about it to his supporters. That's psychotic. Okay, so there's that. Okay, so, and then he's a fish monster too. Plus, now, Donald Trump, meanwhile, is going after Ted Cruz and pivoting off of this National Enquirer story, suggesting that that Ted Cruz's dad was pals with Lee Harvey Oswald and was in some way associated with the JFK assassination. JFK assassination, our conspiracy music here. So, this story hit the National Enquirer, and now Donald Trump, of course, is parlaying the story into something more than it actually should be. Because I don't know, I really don't think Rafael Cruz had something to do with the Kennedy assassination. I'm sorry. Donald Trump said, okay, this is on Fox and Friends. It's asked by the Fox and Friends crew about the elder Cruz saying, not voting for his son could mean the destruction of America. Trump veered without warning into conspiracies surrounding Kennedy's death without ever mentioning the late president by name. Donald Trump said, quote, it's disgraceful that his father can go out and do that. And just so many people are angry about it. And the evangelicals are angry about it, the way he does that. There's a whole thing, he said.
God, I love his quotes.
Yeah. You know,
they're just rambling, tangential, digressive crap.
Right. And then he said, you know, his father was with Lee Harvey Oswald prior to Oswald's being, you know, shot. Trump continued, what is this? Right prior to his being shot, and nobody ever brings it up. They don't even talk about that. That was reported and nobody talks about it. But I think it's horrible. I think it's absolutely horrible that a man can go and do that. What he's saying there. You're right, man.
Yeah, because it was reported in the National Enquirer, you dick.
Yeah. Then Fox News host Brian Kilmeade interjected at that point to explain the National Enquirer published what the tabloid claims is a photo of Rafael Cruz distributing pro-Castro leaflets with Oswald in 1963. It'd be weird if it was 1863, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But the GOP frontrunner interrupted to ask, what was he doing with Lee Harvey Oswald shortly before the death? Shortly before the death.
The death.
Before the shooting. It's horrible. So he's really being weaselly here.
He's just making, you know, there's still part of me that believes that all of this is a joke.
Yeah.
That he's been trying for a long time to figure out some way to sabotage his campaign.
Right.
Because that's just, he would have to be stupid to say that.
Oh,
that's not
God.
Just, that's not just Trump being, you know, his usual sort of narcissistic, evil, shitty, you know, somewhat sociopathic self.
Right.
That's being dumb.
Yeah. It is really dumb. And wait till you hear.
You know what my favorite thing from, my favorite Trump thing from the past, I think week was, yeah. May as well throw this in now. I loved Putin's response to his foreign policy speech, where Putin praised it. Because of course he's going to praise Donald Trump.
Yeah, of course.
Because first of all, he knows exactly, you know, for many reasons he's going to praise Donald Trump. But one of them is that should Trump become the next president, Putin has already figured out how to basically put Trump in, wrap Trump around his finger.
Yeah.
Because as soon as Putin praised Trump's idiotic, rambling, incoherent foreign policy speech, Trump, of course, came back with a compliment for Putin.
Yeah, right.
Because he loves it when people say nice things about him.
Oh,
and Putin
yes.
knows that.
And
in any negotiation, all Putin would have to do is say, I think you're a very smart man. Oh, okay, well, sure. You know what? We'll abandon NATO.
Yeah, right. And, of course, Putin's going to seize upon any opportunity to foul up the American elections. I mean, that's just what he does. It's like he's pulling an old KGB psyop or something here. All right. So, but Ted Cruz responded to Donald Trump's accusation. We're going to talk about that after a last break, back after this.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
This is the Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Yes, it is. Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you getting to Ted Cruz's response to Donald Trump's JFK ridiculousness? It's, oh, you know, I got to admit, I find it so entertaining when Donald Trump goes on and on and on and on about Ted Cruz. For some reason, I just really, really enjoy it when Donald Trump just lays into Ted Cruz and doesn't let go. It's endlessly entertaining to me. And then when Ted Cruz responds, it's like, you know, again, Ted Cruz is basically in the same position as Jeb Bush was like a month or two ago. It's just like, it's like, please, sir, don't hit me again. It's just like he keeps hitting him. And then when Ted Cruz tries to hit back, he just walks into the propeller blade again. It's just, he's just begging for more torment from Donald Trump. And what you do when you're being bullied like that is you don't feed the bully more material. You just, you know, you just kind of take the high road a little bit. Or you've got some real hard-hitting strategy in mind to nail him back, then do that. But don't screw around. What Ted Cruz says here is pretty hardcore. But it just completely plays into the brand that Donald Trump is building around himself as a presidential candidate.
The only thing he says is at the end, he says that that yes, his dad did kill JFK, and he's also Elvis, and you know, he's got Al Capone buried in his backyard, or fucking what's his name?
Yeah, he's got Jimmy Hoffa buried in his backyard. Yeah. But I mean, here's what else he said. He said Donald Trump is a serial philanderer, and he boasts about it. I want everyone to think about your teenaged kids. The president of the United States talks about how great it is to commit adultery, how proud he is. By the way, he just referred to Donald Trump as the president of the United States. So the president of the United States talks about how great it is to commit adultery, how proud he is. He describes his battle with venereal disease as his own personal Vietnam. That's a quote, by the way, on the Howard Stern show. That, by the way, those words used deliberately, that name used deliberately. Do you want to spend the next 5 years with your kids bragging about infidelity? Now, what does he do? He does the same projection, just like a pathological liar. He accuses everybody of lying. That was the extent of Ted Cruz's hard-hitting response to Donald Trump. He also said, the president of the United States has a bully pulpit unlike anybody else. The president of the United States affects our culture. I ask the people of Indiana, think about the next 5 years if this man were to become president. Think about the next 5 years, the boasting, the pathological lying, the bullying. But he probably said it like, think about the next 5 years, the boasting, the pathological lying, the bullying. That's probably how he read that. I don't know for sure, but that's the Ted Cruz delivery.
He talks like SpongeBob.
He does. He does. He kind of has the SpongeBob voice, and then he gets real down low and dramatic. And then the pregnant pauses.
Oh, yes, totally.
Between.
He is the Bill Shatner of shitty politics.
So that quote that I just read took him 45 minutes to actually say those words. Because like, Donald Trump is a serial philanderer and he boasts about it.
Well, he just, the thing about Cruz is that he is so obviously in love with himself.
Yes.
And I think that's the thing that you really get out of the Republicans. And it's the thing that I think is the most offensive about this this election cycle.
Right.
You have two people, the only two people who have any chance at all on the Republican side are both narcissists.
Yeah.
Who are not running because they want to serve the country. They're running because they want to serve themselves.
Yeah.
And it's like it's a battle to see who is the bigger egomaniac.
And the other thing too is that as far as the egos go, Ted Cruz just loves to hear himself talk. He thinks he's got the presidential cadence down to a T. Like yeah, he knows that if I talk like this and if I'm big and oratorical and then also dramatic, that he's somehow everyone's gonna go, woo! All right, he's presidential.
And again, it's fascinating when you compare and contrast that with Donald Trump, who a guy who doesn't read off a teleprompter because he's so in love with the sound of his own voice
yeah.
that he thinks that, you know what, even if I just pull this speech out of my ass, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be
right.
It's going to be great. It's going to be very, very good because I have a very, very good brain.
And this is the sound of Carly Fiorina falling. All right. Okay, so moving along here, we have to spend a couple of minutes talking about my new hero, Ryan Grimm from the Huffington Post.
Ryan Grimm, baby. I swear to God, Ben and I talked about it. I don't know if I should say this in the podcast, but Ben and I talked about it, about sending him a bottle of scotch from the Daily Banter.
Oh, my God. You should totally do that.
We really should.
Ben absolutely needs to do that.
I don't even care whether Ryan Grimm was actually wrong in what he did in terms of, you know, whether he started it or whether he was being a harassing jerk at a party, whatever, he was drunk. I don't care. He did God's work.
Yeah.
Anybody who takes a swing at Jesse Waters, that's God's work.
Yeah, because I mean, I think the way I would have dealt with it would have been a lot less diplomatic than Ryan Grimm.
I would have tagged him in the face.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that ultimately would have been the case.
My goal would have been to put him down.
Yeah, I mean, I would have basically, it would have amounted to me to saying, let's step outside, Jesse.
Yeah.
Let's go out. Let's go out into Waters world.
Yeah, let's go out. Let me get my phone back from you.
Your Waters, this is your world. This is my fist breaking your nose.
Yeah.
That's how it would have gone. Those three statements after we stepped outside, because he's just begging. And of course, throughout Ryan Grimm's exchange with Jesse Waters, Fox News Channel's Jesse Waters at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, throughout the thing, Jesse Waters has got that big old eating douchebag grin on his face, the big frat boy attitude. And, you know, that just would have made me even angrier and just more thirsty. Right.
My favorite description of Jesse Waters was from T-Bog, who said he looks like a frat boy who just got off a rape conviction on a technicality.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the look on Jesse Waters' face. Precisely.
At all times. Always. And that look is always the same. It's that self-satisfied fucking smirk.
So in case you missed it, Ryan Grimm from the Huffington Post challenged Jesse Waters at the White House Correspondents. Basically was snarky with him with regard to Jesse Waters' harassment of Amanda Turkle. You remember back in the day when Amanda Turkle was working at Think Progress, and Jesse Waters tracked her down while she was on her vacation and just basically harassed her with ambush-style questions, just following around with a camera and just pestering her. And so Ryan Grimm, now that Amanda Turkle is at the Huffington Post, Ryan Grimm, who's also at the Huffington Post, went after Jesse Waters at this thing. Eventually, Jesse Waters took Ryan Grimm's cell phone, put Ryan Grimm's cell phone in his pocket, and wouldn't give it back. And then, did fisticuffs ensued there? That bit of a scuffle?
Yeah, they apparently flailed a bit and upended a table. But, I mean, and punches were thrown. That was, I think, an exact quote.
Yeah, that's right.
But, yeah, I mean, is it embarrassing? I wrote about it the other day. Is it embarrassing? Is it like, you know, can you look at it and shake your head at like the state of journalism and discourse in the United States in the year 2016? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course you can. But it still doesn't matter. Nothing gets in the way of the noble cause of just decking Jesse Waters.
It was only a matter of time before someone did it. And I don't think it's over. I think someone else is going to deck him before too long.
I really hope so. I've always hoped that it was one of the people he bothers to ambush.
Yeah.
And you know, and I mean, and you got to make it good because he's going to put you on the air. You're going to be the one who gets in trouble for taking a swing at him. So if you're going to do that, make it good. Knock him the fuck out.
Yeah. I don't know.
He doesn't get up.
If someone were to be antagonized by Jesse Waters enough, it's entirely possible that that person will snap. And when that happens, I'm not going to shed any tears for Jesse Waters' smashed cheekbones.
Yeah, no, neither.
You know what I mean? I probably wouldn't fight Jesse Waters unless he was tormenting me directly, unless he started something up with me and then wouldn't back down. That's the only way. I'm not going to go up to Jesse Waters and just like unilaterally sucker punch him. That's not going to happen. But if he asked for it, if he came up and was tormenting like he does with so many ambush interviews where he doesn't let go, he's like whether he goes after some local judge somewhere or he goes after Amanda Turkle or if he goes after goddamn homeless people in Union Station.
Yeah.
At some point somewhere along the lines, they're going to say, you know, enough of this bag.
There is no clearer illustration of everything Fox News stands for than a rich frat boy douchebag like Jesse Waters basically mocking the homeless.
Exactly. And that's what's astonishing about it. It's that's the Fox News style of muckraking. Instead of going after leadership, more often than not, they go after these non-combatants. They go after homeless people, for God's sake. They went after one guy, Jesse Waters, in a follow-up report, went after some poor guy who was completely incoherent, who had spent some time in a mental institution, and at one point was photographed, I think it was by the Daily News, peeing in the middle of Broadway, or I don't know what street it was in Manhattan, but this homeless person was peeing there. So Jesse Waters said, well, this is newsworthy enough. This is worthy of my time. I'm going to go out and interview this homeless guy who peed in the middle of the street. And then he proceeded to follow him around with the Jesse Waters thing. It's just like, hey, man, what you doing? I'm going to jab you in the eyeball with my finger. Beep, beep. Take that, guy. What are you doing out here? Pee in the street? Why do you think it's okay to pee in the street, huh? Yeah. It's just like, Jesus Christ. At some point, someone's just going to go, why are you bothering me? How is this newsworthy? Yeah. And maybe one of those people will end up being you or me. I don't know. I guess
somehow I doubt that.
Everyone's fair game, and well, yeah, it's right. I don't know. It's probably not going
to
be.
I mean, I put my name to a piece that said that I would love nothing more than to punch the out of him, and that I would laugh my ass off if somebody else did it.
Right. So you know, we'll see if that actually occurs. I don't know, but if there's anyone who deserves it, gotta be Jesse Waters. And his stupid, stupid punch me face. Did you see the hagiography about him in Mediaite? Someone wrote a big, long, extended profile of Jesse Waters and his rise to fame.
No.
Completely hagiographic, yeah. I'll have to send you the link because
let me guess. Joe, let me guess. Joe Concha.
Maybe. It was really, really soupy. And probably just gave, you know, made Jesse Waters' teeny tiny little pecker get hard a little bit. I actually read it. Okay, we got the Postmortem Show coming up next. If you want to know what that is, it's a little mini show that we record right after we're done recording the free show. We just start talking right after the theme song's over. And it's available only for our Patreon subscribers. Go to patreon.com/Bob and Chez or click the Patreon link at bobsuska.com. Sign up at the $5 level for the Postmortem Show. That's $5 a month. And you get the Postmortem Show. That's two Postmortem Shows a week because we do two free shows a week and therefore two Postmortem Shows. At $10 a month, you get the After Party and the Postmortem Shows. At $15 a month, you get the Postmortem Show, the After Party, and an unbleeped commercial-free version of this show. That's all through patreon.com/Bob and Chez. And look, it's pretty cheap. If you don't want to get either of any of those things, you just want to stick with the free show like you do normally, you can just sign up at the $1 level. It's $1 a month. You won't even miss it. $12 a year. Basically, like, I think it's 12 and a half cents per show. All right, so that's patreon.com/Bob and Chez. Go do it now. Postmortem Show is next. Dot, we'll see you on Thursday, folks. Bye-bye.